Hello, testing, testing. 1, 2, 3. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Wall of Text. I'm going to read some stuff. It's not terribly important what it is. I'm just going to read some stuff and also play some music. I apologize, I have really terrible allergies today. Anyway, this is from a book called How to Cook Everything. Cooking at high altitudes. Every increase in elevation brings a decrease in air pressure, which results in a lower boiling point. At 7,000 feet, for example, the altitude of many towns in the southwest, water boils at 199 degrees Fahrenheit. This means slower cooking times and makes a pressure cooker a more desirable appliance. Families who have been living in the mountains for years have already discovered, through trial and error, the best ways to adjust. Newcomers to high altitudes must be patient and experiment to discover what works best under which specific conditions. But here are some general tips for high altitude cooking. 1. For stovetop cooking, use higher heat when practical. Extend cooking times as necessary. Beans and grains will require significantly more time than at sea level. 2. Assume that batters and doughs will rise faster than at sea level. 3. Over 3,000 feet, increase baking temperatures by 25 degrees Fahrenheit. 4. Over 3,000 feet, reduce baking powder or other leavening measurements by about 10%. Increase liquid in baked goods by the same percentage. You may want to reduce the amount of sugar slightly as well. For every 2,000 foot increase in altitude above 3,000 feet, reduce leavening a few percentage points further. That's interesting. I suppose it means that a recipe on top of Mount Everest would look very different. Imperial measurements. Theoretically, both the United Kingdom and Canada use the metric system, but older recipes rely on the imperial measurement system, which differs from standard US measurements in its liquid-fluid measurements. A quarter cup is 2.5 ounces. A half cup or gill is 5 ounces. 1 cup is 10 ounces. A pint, 20. A quart, 40 ounces. The basics of reduction sauces. A reduction sauce is nothing more than simple pan sauce that builds on the drippings and cooked bits left after you roast or sauté something. Add some liquid, like stock, wine, cream, or water, then reduce its volume and thicken it by boiling. Sometimes the reduction is finished with butter or cream. The result is a flavorful sauce that naturally relates to the food instead of being added as a separate component. The process is straightforward and foolproof. Once the meat, chicken, fish, or vegetables are cooked, remove them from your roasting or sauté pan. Then add about twice as much liquid as you would like sauce. Turn the heat to high. If you're working with a large roasting pan, set it over 2 burners and deglaze the pan. Stir, scraping the bottom of the pan to release any solids left from cooking. 3. Keep the liquid bubbling vigorously until it is reduced by about half. If you'd like a smooth sauce, you can strain the solids out before proceeding. To finish the sauce, stir in some softened butter or compound butter, page 32, or flavored oil, page 26, extra virgin olive oil or cream. Taste and sprinkle with a little salt and pepper, and if necessary, it might not be, some chopped herbs. To serve, you can pool the sauce underneath your food, pour a little on top, or pass it at the table. Every reduction sauce is a variation on these simple steps. Some are thickened by adding flour before the liquid or cornstarch mixture after reducing. Most are more heavily seasoned. You change reduction sauces by manipulating the various stages. For example, when you heat the pan before deglazing, you might saute a little garlic, shallot, or other aromatic. But basically, that's about it. bits left in your pen. This version is easy, fast, and lump-free. Stir in a quarter cup or more of heavy cream just before serving if you want a creamier, richer tasting sauce. For more about ways to serve, to thicken any cooked sauce, see 4 ways to thicken a sauce, which follows. 1 cup dry white wine. Half a cup chopped onion. 3 cups plus 3 or 4 tablespoons of chicken, beef, or vegetable stock. To make your own, see pages 157 to 159 for water. Half a cup minced giblets or other meat. More to taste options. 2 tablespoons cornstarch, or a bit more as needed. Salt and freshly ground black pepper.
Come ascends on surreptitious sandals. Only here can a city live without woe or vociferation. Uneternal, without bugles or lips or sonatas, with only a dialogue of lions and falling water. When you move upward or down on the stairs, walking or running, sitting or planting, sewing or cooking, or kneeling things down, writing, returning, or gone, when all the world says, resulting from traumatic injury with acute pain, large quantities of histamine are released in the blood. In acute pain, as in addiction, toxins, doses of morphine are readily tolerated. Rabbits who have a high histamine content already in the blood are extremely resistant to morphine. My own experience with antihistamines has not been conclusive. I once took a cure in which only antihistamines were used, and the results were good, but I was lightly addicted at the time, and had been without morphine for 72 hours when the cure started. I have frequently used antihistamines since then, withdrawal symptoms, with disappointing results. In fact, they seem to increase my depression when I hear it. I do not suffer.
The next day, Richter called me into his office where he was pumping iron and talking on his cell phone. He didn't get up, but he wiped the sweat from his face and pointed over to his desk. "The envelope, please." I went over to pick up a small packet marked with my name. Richter got off the phone, still chuckling at his joke. "One of these days, I wouldn't be surprised if you're sitting there in the audience full of beautiful people, wearing the most devastating Alaya gown, and you hear those very words followed by, 'And the best screenplay goes to you.'"
I'm
The potato. What on this wide earth that is made or does by nature grow is more homely, yet more beautiful than the useful potato? What would this world full of people do, rich and poor, high and low, were it not for this little thought of, but very necessary, potato? True, 'tis homely to look on, nothing pretty even its blow, but it will bear acquaintance, this useful potato. This is awful. For when it is cooked and opened, it's so white and mellow, you forget it ever was homely, this useless potato. Good Jesus. This is from a book called Very Bad Poetry. And it is quite awful. Wow. Okay. Okay, here's one. It's called I Kissed Pa Twice After His Death. I kissed your pa at the grave. Then soon he was buried away. Wreaths were put on his tomb, whose beauty soon decay. I saw him coming, stepping high, which was off his walk the way. I had stopped at a house nearby. His face was as pale as clay. When he was having convulsions, he feared he would hurt me, therefore told me to go away. He had dug artichokes for me. Pa dug artichokes on that day. He never will dig any more. He has only paid the debt we owe. We should try to reach the shining shore. Fascinating. How are y'all doing? Thank you. Corned beef mix 6 to 12 servings, time 3 hours, largely unattended. Corned beef is brisket, ideally, that, like wet cured ham, has been steeped in a spicy brine. If you have a choice, buy the flat cut rather than the point cut. Cooking corned beef is literally as easy as boiling water. It's tough to overcook, so this is a good candidate for the slow cooker. With mustard, pickles, and good rye bread, this makes a fine old-fashioned meal. Put the corned beef in a large heavy pot and cover with water. Add all of the remaining ingredients. Bring to a boil and skim all the foam that rises to the surface. Lower the heat so that the water bubbles occasionally rather than constantly. Cook, turning every 30 minutes or so for about 2 hours. Pierce with a thin-bladed knife, like a boning knife. The meat will probably still be fairly tough, but it's time to begin checking. Check every 15 minutes or so. When the corned beef allows the knife to pass into the middle without much resistance, it is ready. Drain if you like. Put the meat into a 300 degrees Fahrenheit oven for 10 minutes to dry out the exterior a little. Or wrap it carefully in tin foil and refrigerate for up to 2 days. Reheat at 300 degrees for 30 minutes in the foil, unwrap, and heat for about 15 minutes more. Slice across the grain, as you would brisket, and serve.
Shaping baguettes. Step 1. Press the dough into a rectangle of any length that will fit into your oven. Step 2. Fold each long side of the rectangle up into the middle. Step 3. Roll into a log and use your fingers to press the resulting seam together lightly. Step 4. Just before baking, make a few shallow slashes in the surface of the dough. Step 5. You can create what's called a couche, a bed, essentially, for your baguette to rise with a piece of heavy canvas, a towel, or a tablecloth. If you like, you can start by making a baguette and shape the loaf into a ring or a crown.
Thank you.
New friends. I done left mama, daddy, Miss Lichtenstein.